Hey, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
What are you doing, man?
Copying this really massive file between two Windows Server 2003 boxes in the data center, and it is taking forever. Look, two bars. That's taken hours. At this rate, it's going to take days just to copy this really massive file. You know what I could do in days? I could walk to the data center on the other side of town, plug in my USB, copy the file manually, walk back, get a cup of tea, have a cake, and it would still be quicker than this copy process. What was going on with SMB1 and in those days? I mean, if only I could hear from the guys who made SMB1 and what they've got planned for our future and how we should all move to SMB 2 and 3. That would be a dream.
So it's July 15th. That means yesterday there's no more Server 2003, which makes me bittersweet, right? I mean, I kind of like came to work at Microsoft because of 2003. They rolled up like a school bus and dumped out 100 of us to work on Active Directory because I think the phone queues and support were 50 calls holding was the average. So 2003 was like the big breakout OS. Kind of like came here, started making money and making a big deal out of myself for the first time. But there's good news.
We know it's gone now.
So something that shipped in 2003, shipped in 2000, shipped in LAN Manager.
Shipped in NT3.5. Shipped in Win9X.
Win9X.
Shipped on DOS.
Does it go back to 89? 88?
I don't know, man.
Man, that is some old ass stuff. SMB1.
SMB1.
So, Greg, one of the proud owners of SMB1. Dave.
He's a disavowed owner of SMB1.
Right. Dave, definitely the proud stepfather of SMB1. And me, Ned, the don't want to admit it program manager of SMB1. 2003's gone. That means, do we need SMB1 anymore?
No Windows operating system that we currently support requires SMB1 anymore.
So Windows 7 is
SMB2.
SMB2.1. And Windows 8 is SMB3. And then 2012 R2 is all SMB3, and the new 2016 is SMB3.1.1. Yep. So who cares?
No, this is really good news. SMB1 is pretty ancient and not really built to survive in today's network environment.
So let's say I don't believe you, even though I do believe you. SMB1 shipped with XP 2003, 2000. It had stuff like signing, and it had, you know, some. I mean, I remember configuring those things. Domain controllers would say you must be signed.
Sure, sure. So the protocol supports signing, but the protocol does not require you to implement signing. And so that means that there are SMB1 server implementations out there, not Microsoft ones, but there are server implementations of SMB1 that do not support signing, which means that if you were to connect to those, you get no integrity protection for your network traffic.
But we just did that big update, MUP hardening, where we say like, oh, you gotta make sure you're using signing no matter what, it's gonna use signing.
It won't connect to those servers then.
Okay.
So I should point out, though, that even when SMB1 signing is available, the performance is pretty bad. It is based on extremely old hash algorithms. Has nothing like the performance of SMB even 2, and certainly not SMB 3, where we heavily optimized all of the security code paths.
Well, I mean, SMB 3 has encryption.
SMB3 does have encryption. Yes.
SMB3 has signing that you can require, and it actually gets required. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't happen, and you don't connect.
Correct. Signing was a required component of both SMB2 and SMB3.
Right.
So you don't have this worry that you have with SMB1. So with SMB1, you're always rolling the dice. When you connect to the server, you kind of never know what you're going to get.
So what does that mean? Like, man in the middle?
Sure, yeah.
Arc poisoning.
There's all
DNS
sorts of ways
that
you could exploit this. I mean, by default, an SMB1 client doesn't require signing, so he won't reject a connection where signing is not negotiated. So if you were to connect to a server, you get what you get. You would hope that there's some level of security, but there's no guarantee, and servers are free not to implement it.
Yeah, but I'm on a closed network, and I think I'm all safe. Oh, wait! Edward Snowden, the NSA. What closed network exactly are we talking about here?
Not to mention that over the past, 6 months, the number of remotely exploitable vulnerabilities...
The router Wi-Fi vulnerability
...that we found in home Wi-Fi routers and...
Yeah, just go to the register right now and search for router vulnerability and then just don't read the comments.
Yeah, it's... It's silly to believe that your home network is secure. It's running botnets right now.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
So where were you in all this? How long have you been working on SMB now?
Windows 2000 is when I came in.
God, you're
a
so
long time ago.
Old.
So, but the last SMB1 change I made was the ability to uninstall it. That was my favorite SMB1 change I ever made.
Nice. Yep. So when can I start uninstalling it?
I think it was server 2012. We didn't turn it off by default because there was too much compatibility concerns. But you can go into the add or remove features and just unselect it, and it'll turn off SMB1 client, SMB1 server. It'll turn off the browser service, and it'll remove a lot of just legacy code and crap. And that way, if there's ever any security updates or other stuff that comes out, you don't have to download them. You don't have to install them.
It greatly reduces the attack surface.
Yeah.
So, first question, is it browser or is it Bowser?
It's both. And that's Larry's fault. So.
I know, it's Larry's fault.
Yep.
Larry has a blog post on it, I think, where he explains the story.
Exactly.
Larry Osterman for you at home. and his terrific beard.
You know how many times I've had that bug filed against me? That the event log misspelled? It's spelled Bowser, and we need to rename it.
That is fantastic. So, So I can go to add remove Windows, like AppWiz on the client, Windows 8, and just say uninstall SMB1.
Yep.
I can go to Server Manager. I can go to remove Windows feature on server and just get rid of SMB1.
Yep.
So what if I'm not sure?
So one of the new features that we're adding to Windows 10 and Server 2016 is SMB1 auditing on the server side. So we have a new event channel that shows up in Event Viewer.
What's it called?
It's under the SMB server node. I believe it's called Audit.
Oh, that's an adjective. Okay.
And right now, the only audit event that you can enable is the SMB1 event. It's disabled by default simply because we don't want to spam somebody's event log if they're not interested in this information. But if you go into PowerShell and you use set SMB server configuration, you can enable SMB1 auditing, at which point it will write out an event to this audit channel whenever an SMB1 client, an SMB1 only client, would attempt to access your server.
Okay.
Right? So if you want some sort of assurance that this is a safe thing to do, turning off SMB1, you could always turn on auditing on your servers and let auditing run for some length of time, you know, a week, 2 weeks, something like that.
Sure.
Go back and look at the audit log and see if there's any events there. If there's events, then clearly you have clients that still rely on SMB1, in which case you'll have the IP address and possibly name of the client that connected, and you can go hunt them down and figure out what's going on there.
What are the odds that's actually a Windows client? Unless the customer, for some reason, has XP or 2003
live. If you're running unsupported Windows clients, or if you have some sort of extended support guarantee, I suppose it's possible. The likelihood is that it's probably going to be third-party clients or like old XP machines that are still hanging around.
Okay, so third-party, like some appliance, some device.
Something. Yeah, printer, scanner.
Something with firmware, basically, that never gets updated. Okay.
But if the audit log is empty after, you know, some reasonable length of time has passed, then you have at least some level of confidence that there are no more SMB1-only client devices on your network, and then it might be a reasonable thing to turn off SMB1.
Let's say that I've gotten real brave. I'm going to get rid of SMB1. I think that I've got no, you know, devices lying around. But I still need to convince my management team, like, why am I going to SMB2? Why am I going to SMB 2.1, 2.2, 3.1, 3.11? Since you've been around forever and ever, give me the sales pitch.
I mean, so a lot of the security features, like even signing and stuff, if you look at the history of SMB1, they were kind of grafted on after the fact, because you're starting with a protocol base that was, I mean, came up in the DOS Landman days, and then we were constantly like evolving it as new features came on, right? So when things like ACLs, and you know, it was originally running on FAT, where the file system didn't have permissions, and then when we did group policy, suddenly it needed a signing story, and then we needed to add Kerberos support. So everything was very like iterative, like, how do we make this new thing work on this existing sort of legacy code base? And when we did the SMB2 work around Vista timeframe, the idea was to try and distill out and have a protocol that both has the security features that we know we need, has the command sets that we know we need, and to cut out a lot of this legacy stuff that was never ever required. So like, I mean, if you look back through the number of commands and stuff that are associated with it is greatly reduced.
It went from like 100 something down to like,
it was hard because there were commands and there were subcommands and then there were sub-subcommands on the transacts, and it was just crazy. And then because of that, you could have things like durability or CA that let the client reconnect and preserve state that were just too hard. Continuous availability.
Okay.
So the original SMB2 was, how do we make the protocol sort of lean and secure and do what we need to do, but cut out all the other stuff that we don't need? And then since then, as you move on to SMB3, it's saying, now that we have this much more streamlined, you know, protocol base, how can we add all the improvements that people really want? Things like RDMA support, things like multi-channel, things like continuous availability that either accelerates how fast we operate or makes it more reliable in the presence of server failures or network failures. And then a lot of the other things are the security side, like what Greg was saying about, you know, how do we detect man in the middle? And there's some of those cases that honestly you just can't close down with SMB1, that if we are in an SMB2 only ecosystem, we can, you know, have the client enforce signing and detect if someone's trying to modify our packets en route, even when we're doing initial connection establishment and stuff.
I know that when we did the, when we worked with folks to make the MUP hardening piece, you know, kind of the initial response was, how come this isn't being done in 2003 as well? I mean, it wasn't because we didn't think it was important, it was because it was logistically almost impossible to get the work done and make it all work in SMB1 the way it worked in 2 and 3 and still be done like within the lifetime of 2003 support, or right, even like a year after it. I mean, that took a long time to implement.
So I mean, security aside though, just going from SMB1 to SMB2, right, you get large MTU support, which doesn't exist in SMB1.
Yep.
So you get better performance in like WAN environments. When did
you get all the directory caching pieces for WAN? I mean, you get all those things that, you know, basically, what's it called?
Yeah, the metadata caches for SMB1 were really poor, and they were implemented from the start with SMB2 in terms of caching large directories.
Leasing came in with
Windows 7, SMB 2.1.
Yeah, right. Yep. And that's going to be a big performance improvement because that lets you cache more on the client side. So there's going to be a number of just sort of basic, fundamental.
Generally just works better.
Yeah, just works better.
Just seems like suddenly the server is snappier.
Right. And then moving from SMB2 to SMB3, which I would really encourage people to look at as the new baseline. That would be the ideal baseline here. Like Dave pointed out, you get multi-channel. So all of a sudden you get resilience across NIC failures. You get the ability to bond NICs together, so you have bandwidth aggregation. You have much improved security with encryption now on the wire, and even the signing algorithms are faster if you want to just go the integrity route. There's just a whole host of improvements that weren't possible to push back into the SMB1 protocol that you're leaving, you know, on the table if you're sticking with that.
His review's already done, right? Because he's only talking about the stuff that he worked on and how great it is. So, that's the now, that's Windows 8.1, that's 2012 R2. We've done some stuff besides auditing for 3.1.1, some of which is, you know, really coming pretty soon, right? I mean, it'll be coming whatever the next, you know, server sort of preview there might be, or coming in
the client release,
in the actual client, which is supposed to be July 29th, right there. So, like, we did the auditing piece you're talking about.
Guest logon.
So let's talk about the guest logon thing, because we tried that a little bit early on in some of the early October build.
Yeah.
And ran into a little resistance.
So we ended up changing the default setting, but the feature still exists and, cool, and will be released. So the basic idea with the guest logon stuff was that, coming from the SMB1 days, there was this idea that pre-Active Directory, where machines don't share an auth database, you wanted it to be really, really easy.
Right?
Yeah, work group scenarios. You wanted it to be really easy to create a network share in your machine and give me access to files that you put there. Right, but the way that SMB wants to work in general is that when I connect to a machine, I try to authenticate to it so that we can get an actually authenticated connection, and we can use things like signing and crypto and, you know, etc. But of course, that requires my credentials to be plumbed onto your computer's security database, which in a workgroup environment is probably not.
It doesn't scale very fast, right?
Yeah, exactly. So someone decided way back in the day that the way to solve this was to introduce this guest access feature, which says that if you come into a machine and you try to log on using NTLM and logon fails, but the server's guest account is enabled and the guest account has never had its password set, then the server would ignore the auth failure and log you in as a local guest and allow you to connect to the share.
It's very convenient, especially if you're not actually the server that you thought
it's
you were connecting to.
Super convenient, but since you don't actually have a shared secret that you've established through an actual authentication,
no guarantee.
You cannot use signing, even if it were supported.
Right.
You can't use crypto, and you don't know, neither side knows who you're actually talking to.
Right. So I think I'm talking to Greg, but Greg's really Vladimir.
Yes. So, it sort of strips all the security off the conversation that you're having with your server. So the worst part about the guest logon is that it's not an intentional action on the client. It's something that the server does to the client.
Right.
So from the client's perspective, you just access a mapped network drive or a UNC path and, you know, Explorer pulls up the view of the share and you start doing whatever you were going to do. And as far as you know, you auth to that server and everything's great. But unbeknownst to you, the server has, you know, ignored your auth and just logged you in as this, you know, insecure guest account. So there's a variety of attacks, spoofing attacks and whatnot that this feature opens up, and we really wanted to see if we could close that down. And so our original attempt was that we made a new setting on the client that determines whether the client is willing to accept one of these insecure guest logons. So if a server tried to do this to the client would consult his local policy and decide what to do about it.
Right.
And our original attempt set that policy to reject insecure guest logons, which meant that you would have been safe by default from this attack vector. Unfortunately, it turns out that a large number of NAS appliances depend on guest logon to work properly out of the box.
Convenience sake?
Yeah, for convenience sake. And we got lots of feedback saying that
that's the nice way of the internet saying that Ned sucks. I'm going to kill Ned.
Yes.
I hate you, Ned. Die, Ned.
So we ended up revisiting that default setting, and it has reverted back to the behavior that has always existed in Windows, which is that by default a client is willing to accept a insecure guest logon. Although we do have a group policy and local registry settings that you can set that would harden the client and tell him to start rejecting.
Do we have the group policy in the coming release?
It's certainly in the server release.
Okay.
I believe it will probably be showing up in the client release in the first update, whenever that is.
Okay.
The ecosystem there is interesting. We did some telemetry for Windows 10 about guest access after we got the feedback. And again, when we talk about moving off of SMB1, I think from the numbers on SMB2, taking out loopback authentication, there was less than 1% of the connections were actually using guest. So guest works on SMB2, but now I think you're working with devices that sort of were developed in an age where security was important. But when we looked at the SMB1 numbers, I think it was somewhere around 40% of the auth that our Windows 10 beta users talking SMB1 were actually using guest.
Yeah, that's the home consumer.
Exactly.
Right? Using a NAS, probably.
I think it just reflects that a lot of the SMB1 devices, though, were built in an era where security was not a priority.
Yeah. I mean, we went and looked at a bunch of these things. Mm-hmm. We wanted to hide this from anybody. and found that a lot of them use guest just as a sake of convenience. I mean, this is all with hindsight being 2020, and those, you know, I had a bomb sniffing dog for my mail for a few weeks after that release we first did, the unintended consequences of security. But I mean, we found a lot of them required guest just to make it so that when you set it up and you first connected and you had a share that was, you know, for the family to drop their photos on there, and nobody had to understand ACLs, which is understandable for a NAS vendor to not necessarily want to deal with explaining, you know, access control entries to grandma. But in the end, most of those devices, it turns out, not all, but most of them did support using security. Some of them, some of the really good ones required using it, and that seems to be the direction finally that they're taking. The newer, more expensive ones took it more seriously than the older, less expensive ones.
And we should point out that if you want to solve this problem, if you just create an account on the NAS so that you actually have a login account,
that's all.
On the Windows client, you can put those credentials into Credman so that it's a seamless experience. Like, attempting to access the NAS will pull the creds out of Credman so that you don't have to sit there and type in a password. I mean, there's no friction.
A lot of the NASs even give you a little agent that will take care of that for you, and you just give it the password, and then it stores it, and it maps a drive for you and just knocks it all out. It's no big deal. I mean, we haven't had guests turned on in Windows since, I think, Windows 2000.
It's been a long time.
I mean, I think in Windows 2000, we first turned off guest by default.
Hey, I think it was disabled by default. It might have been disabled. Yeah, on server, it might have been disabled earlier.
Even on NT?
I don't know. I'd have to go back.
You're so old. So old. So, okay. So we've got insecure guest logon, registry value, back to being off by default so that I stop getting, you know, boiled rabbits sent to me. And then auditing.
Auditing. Then some of the other big improvements are new crypto support. So we've introduced support for AES GCM as a cipher.
Super fast?
Super fast, much faster than AES CCM, which
just
we shipped
safe.
in Windows 8 and 8.1.
Right.
And we also introduced a new anti-downgrade attack mechanism that we call pre-auth integrity. It's just extended validation of your pre-logon packet exchange in the SMB protocol to verify that an attacker is not attempting to force you back to an older, less secure dialect, or attempting to modify the parameters of the dialect you negotiated to a less secure value.
So, putting you on the spot, what if I'm using some kind of intermediary devices, WAN acceleration type things, and that shows up?
So the way that that works is that those devices will either have to operate in pass-through mode, like they'll either have to not mess with the packets, or those devices have to be part of the domain, and you would probably need some sort of Kerberos delegation enabled such that they have knowledge of the credentials, and then they could rewrite the packets because they have access to your secret keys.
I'm not going to name names, but I know of at least a couple that do that sort of stuff, and I know of one that does handle that in particular. So, I mean, they are out there. This is not like, I mean, can I turn this off?
No.
In
the new protocol, this is on by default, and there's no ability to turn this off.
Okay.
Forward. The thing to understand here, though, is that from the perspective of the SMB client and SMB server, there's no difference between a WAN accelerator and a man in the middle. They look the actions.
Well, it is a man in the middle.
Yeah, they are a man in the middle. They just happen to be a benign one in the intended case.
Hopefully.
But we can't tell the difference.
Right.
So the only thing we can do to be secure is to make sure that no one in the middle can modify our packets without our knowledge.
Now, we spend a bunch of time talking to vendors about this. It's not going to be a big shock.
Yeah, we go to all the protocol plug fests, and we interact with a lot of companies who are working in the SMB 2 and 3 ecosystem. We tell them before we release what the changes are going to be, and then we work with them as they have questions and stuff.
And we invite them here a couple times.
Did we just
do one a few weeks
ago? Yeah, there was a plug fest a few weeks ago, and then we'll have another one in September out in California.
Yeah, starting to bleed together.
Yep.
Okay, so anything else that we should be interested in for SMB 3.1.1?
Cluster rolling upgrade. We need to make some protocol changes to make that work. It's, of course, a really interesting feature. It allows you to take a Windows failover cluster and update the nodes to a new operating system one node at a time while still maintaining transparent failover of workloads between the nodes.
Right.
So that's super useful for cluster admins.
Basically, it's like a functional level, like if you're used to Active Directory.
Correct.
You can just say it's like at the 2012 R2 functional level for clusters, and the nodes will just, from a negotiate dialect perspective, just operate like only be able to do the stuff
correct
that a 2012 R2 server can use.
Yep.
Which I would love to have as a feature, just like I can do for anything, Dave. Like, rather than me having to roll out Windows 7 boxes to test Windows 7, just do it for that.
I don't know, so what am I missing?
What else? Did you talk about the parallel piece? The parallel encryption?
Oh, parallel encryption.
I mean, yeah, there's always like perf implementation improvements that aren't protocol visible.
Yeah,
that's true. So, yeah, we did some work to optimize the crypto paths so that if we have large reads and writes, so the typical example you would think of would be copy file,
right,
where you've got, you know, a single thread doing, you know, some number of large 1 meg IOs, the SMB client and server can now break those up into smaller bits, sort of farm out the encryption work across all the processors that are available in the system, and you get a pretty substantial perf increase.
How substantial? Give me real numbers, don't lie.
So in the preliminary testing I've done, assuming that you have extra CPU available, because crypto, of course, does cost something.
With AES and I.
With AES and I on, you know, modern processors. We were getting line rate on 10 gig networks.
You were hitting 1.2-ish gigabytes per second,
mm-hmm,
encrypted.
Yep.
What would that have been on 2012?
Well, it was less than half of that, if I recall.
So maybe twice as fast?
Yep.
Or maybe reduced by...
I'd say twice as fast. It's probably twice as fast? Pretty good.
Wow.
And from a deployment perspective, it's just flipping a bit on the share. You just tag the share and you say you want the data encrypted and you don't have to do anything else.
Yeah, that is the nice thing about it. And certainly, I mean, if somebody had asked me about this a year ago, I would have said, like, encryption in the data center, let's say like the scale-out file server Hyper-V scenario, like, why? But yet again, you know, that dude in Moscow right now.
So here's the really interesting thing about our new crypto story in Windows 10 and Server 2016 is that the crypto paths have now been so heavily optimized that when we're using the new AES-GCM cipher, which is the default for 3.1.1, we're actually faster than the signed code path. So you get integrity plus privacy, and you get it with less overhead and faster than if you were to just sign your traffic and get integrity.
Plus, I mean, I'm not going to be like a jerk like I usually am, but I mean, signing is security theater to me. It is, you know,
it doesn't give you privacy.
It doesn't give you any privacy, so it's like, yes, I'm definitely, no one's messing with my traffic, but they're still seeing it.
There's a case for it. In group policy, you know, your group policies aren't secret. You want to make sure that they end up on the clients, you know, unmodified. But I agree.
I don't know. There's some group policies I could think of that I wouldn't want anybody to see what they actually transmit over the network.
Fair enough. But the point is that in Windows 10 and moving forward, our crypto story is now more heavily optimized than our signing story. So
just
you can actually turn on full crypto and have better performance and be safer.
Yeah, like there's no reason to use signing anymore, really. In that scenario, that perfect 3.1.1 storm.
Sure, older clients.
You still need it for the older clients. You can leave them both turned on because we're just going to use the toughest, most aggressive one,
yep,
if we have the choice, right? Okay. Anything else interesting about SMB?
I mean, a lot of
what
other
have you been doing for the last year?
It's used internally by a lot of the other features, though, right? We work with a lot of other teams, and that's what we're seeing. Like,
I wouldn't know what you're talking about.
Like the Storage Spaces Direct stuff and the volume replication, right? There's
storage
a lot of cases,
yeah,
now where people build on top of the work that we've done and can take advantage of the performance and everything else. And
yeah, I mean,
enable
for the,
other features.
For the storage replica feature, that is, instead of writing our own transport, we just said, let's just use SMB3 and get all that stuff for free and focus on all the endless bizarrities of block replication and not the rest. Yep. So yeah, that's probably been an advantage. I think storage space is direct. This is SMB3.
Hyper-V live migration.
Storage, yeah, that's... Yep.
That's not new to Windows.
Storage
10.
Quaz is dealing with SMB at some point.
They work across
well.
SMB.
Across
so,
SMB?
But, yep.
Yeah, the list goes on and on. It's kind of our go-to protocol just inside server in general. Okay, so I feel a little bit better. I feel a little bit better that 2003 is gone. You know, I was feeling a little nostalgic, seeing all the tombstone emblems in my Twitter feed. Everybody thought that they had the original, 2003 is gone post, and that we didn't advertise it like crazy for 2 years. I did point out in there, which everybody forgot, that it also means you can get rid of your 2003 Active Directory functional levels, which no one had considered. So I still wear a little bit of an AD hat. And of course, a bunch of people said, no, they want to keep running 2003, so it was totally a waste of my time. So that's pretty good. So the gist of this is, it's finally possible for you to remove SMB1, and we finally give you the tools to audit it so that you can feel comfortable and safe as long as you started to deploy 2016. So this is going to be something that customers are going to be rolling towards over the next few years. It's not something they can just do tomorrow. But they can add it to their future, and if you want to be serious about using SMB safely, it's get rid of SMB1.
Yeah, with modern Windows clients, and even when you look at modern Linux distributions, SMB2 is sort of the new baseline. It's supported in most clients out there.
Samba 4 has SMB3, and large chunks of the implementation are there. You can certainly do it. Okay.
F*** it, I'll use USB.